Our last case this morning is 2020-643, Rancho Cincinnati Rivers LLC versus Warren County Board of Revision et al. For the appellant, Mr. Byrne.
Good morning, Your Honor, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Jeff Byrne, and I represent Rancho Cincinnati Rivers LLC. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case can be resolved with a simple and plain interpretation of well-established Ohio assessment law. Ohio is a market value state for tax assessment purposes, meaning that property should be valued based on what it would sell for on the open market as of the assessment date at issue. This is what we can refer to as a hypothetical sale. The next question becomes, what legal interest must be presumed to have transferred in that hypothetical sale? The 129th General Assembly in 2012 stated that property must be valued in the fee simple estate as if unencumbered. This court, in the case often referred to as Lowe's 2, stated that it is plain that a lease is an encumbrance, and revised code 5713.03 is directed to value the realty as if unencumbered, means that property should be valued as if it were free of lease encumbrances. It should simply follow that property tax assessments in Ohio must reflect what a property would sell for in a hypothetical sale when the property is unencumbered by a lease, free of lease encumbrances. That means no lease in place. This simple directive of 5713.03 has not been so plain to tax authorities opposing taxpayers in assessment appeals, as well as the Board of Tax Appeals and courts throughout the state, which we are dealing with the Warren County Court of Common Pleas and 12th District Court of Appeals. Rancho is asking this court that a property that is leased at the time of transfer is not free of lease encumbrances. This court has not made the leap, the logical leap from property must be valued as if free of lease encumbrances to that a property that is leased at the time of sale is not unencumbered. This should seem obvious, but this is the issue that keeps coming up in these assessment appeals that Rancho is asking this court to resolve. A property that is leased at the time of sale has the presence of the an encumbrance, whether or not that encumbrance is at market. The presence of an encumbrance affects property rights, something that is often referred to as the bundle of rights. A lease encumbers a property by preventing the purchaser from occupying the property themselves or leasing it to another. These are two of the what we call sticks in the bundle of rights. A lease that is not at market, or a lease that is at market, both of those encumber the property, both of those affect the bundle of rights. The only way a property can transfer unencumbered is if the property transfers without a lease. There's no evidence that the General Assembly meant anything other than unencumbered when they wrote the words as if unencumbered in the statute. The 12th District, which is on appeal in this case, the 10th District in the Lowe's versus Cuyahoga County Board of Education case involving the Brooklyn City Schools, which was heavily cited by the 12th District, and the Court of Common Pleas have invented these standards for interpretation of revised code 5713.03 that have no basis in the plain words of the statute that say as if unencumbered. Paragraph 29 of the 12th District decision states that property is to be valued in its current use as a functioning occupied store. As they go on to say, Rancho and its appraiser would value an occupied property, like the property in this case, as if it were vacant on the tax lien date, rather than occupied and rented at market rent. The Court of Common Pleas in this case stated Racic valued the property as if the first occupant at the structure had left and the property was sitting for sale vacant. This hypothetical property is not the property we have at issue in this case. There is no exception to the as if unencumbered language of 5713.03 when the property in question is actually leased on the assessment date or actually occupied by a retailer, whether or not that's its original tenant, original occupant. The words as if create a hypothetical. So whether the property is owner occupied, whether it is totally vacant, or whether it is currently occupied, the property is to be valued as if unencumbered. There is simply no support for the courts to carve out an exception to this plain language when the property in question is actually leased or actually occupied. I think this court should contrast these invented standards by the Court of Common Pleas in the 12th District with the application of the law by Magistrate Hasselbeck in this case, who heard the appraisers, heard the initial arguments in this case. He stated the property which is subject of this appeal is encumbered by a lease. A plain reading of Revised Code 5713.03 suggested it must be appraised as if unencumbered. It would follow that any comparable sales of encumbered properties must be adjusted to reflect the absence of a lease. It does not follow in the magistrate's view that encumbered comparable properties may be used in a comparable sales approach unadjusted merely because the rent for such properties is at market rate. Rancho asks that this court apply this plain reading of the law in this case and hold that a lease at market rent is not an unencumbered property. I want to also address the 10th District decision, which was cited by the 12th District in this case. It seems the 10th District and some of the other decisions citing it underpinning these decisions is the feeling that the revisions to 5713.03 and the words as if unencumbered simply change nothing when it comes to Ohio assessment law. The 10th District wrote in paragraph 28 of that decision, the unencumbered language added to the Ohio Revised Code in 2012 implied some changes to the precedent previously set by case law, but not to such principle. There's simply no support for the notion that the words as if unencumbered meant nothing and were meant to change nothing. In fact, this court in 2009, in the Meyer decision, footnote 4 of that decision, held that the terms lease fee and fee simple were distinctions made by appraisal law and not by the law, assessment law of the state of Ohio. The words as if unencumbered added in 2012 can be seen as a direct rebuke of that holding. The General Assembly in 2012 said, with the words as if unencumbered, have now stated that Ohio's law mirrors appraisal theory that a lease is an encumbrance and property is to be valued as if unencumbered.
But Mr. Byrne, this was a case before the Board of Tax Appeals in the Brooklyn school case. And I feel like you're kind of mixing apples and oranges here, because I'm not even sure why you didn't go to the Board of Tax Appeals and why you went this route. But we were talking about the special purpose doctrine. I mean, the court was talking about the special purpose doctrine in that case.
I referenced the Brooklyn Lowe's decision, which emanated from the Board of Tax Appeals, because it was cited by the 12th District in this case. And I think it's important to note, and the quote that I just read from the 10th District was cited by the 12th District in this case. It's important, while the 10th District decision did invoke the special purpose doctrine, it also made a holding regarding the interpretation of Revised Code 5713.03 that had nothing to do with the special purpose doctrine. The 10th District seems...
What the decision says in paragraph 28 is that the unencumbered language that was added to the statute implied some changes to the precedent that was previously set by case law, but not to the principal. It didn't wipe out the special purpose doctrine.
I believe that statement was relating to all assessments in general. The notion, if this court were to hold that the special purpose doctrine remains, of course, yes, the special purpose doctrine does remain and can remain an exception to 5713.03, but there was no special purpose doctrine invoked by the 12th district in this case. The 12th district held that this property can be valued as if it were encumbered by a lease on the assessment date. And that is a plain error of law under revised code 5713.03 that states the property must be valued as if unencumbered. And with that, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you. We have two appellees. I believe that our first is Mr. DiMuzio.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. My name is Dave DiMuzio. I'm the attorney for King School District. I'll be speaking for about 12 minutes, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for Mr. Watkins, who's the attorney for the county. As I sat listening this morning to Mr. Byrne, I thought I was listening to the oral argument for the Lowe's 2 case. These are the same exact arguments that we heard and the court rejected several years ago. I just wanted to quote, because it's so important, the main holding of the Lowe's 2 court, where they talk about the specific language, and they say that the language of RC 5713.03 applies to the valuation of the property itself. It does not prescribe any standards to be applied in a comparable sale analysis. Lowe's statutory argument, in effect, would have us insert words the General Assembly did not use. We declined to do so. They're again asking this court to apply new standards to comparable sale analysis. And as far as we're concerned, Lowe's too, you know, handles all of the issues that we have here today. And if that wasn't enough, if the court were to look at the reply brief that Mr. Byrne filed, at the bottom of page 15 of the reply brief, they clearly show that they're still consumed by Lowe's 2, and Lowe's 2 is the real issue. They begin the last paragraph by accusing me of misrepresenting the facts when I said appellees are not arguing the property should be valued as if already leased in italics. He then cites to page 55 of Mr. Burt's testimony. You'd think when you went there, there'd be some support for this allegation that I misrepresented it. You'd think there'd be something on page 55 in which Mr. Burt admits that he looks at this as if it was already leased. Nothing like that is on page 55. When you go there, it is simply Mr. Burt talking about his comparable sale analysis, talking about how he looks at leases, see if they're at market to determine whether or not they're representative of fee simple. So what does this mean if we're assuming that they're acting in good faith when they make this assertion? What they're really saying is if an appraiser applies the principles of Lowe's 2, they violate the statute. So when they attack Mr. Burt, they're really attacking this court's holding in Lowe's 2. There's a distinction between how you value the actual property itself on the day of valuation and what methodology you use and what comparable sales you look in order to find out whether or not that's accurate. Mr. Burt did not assume a lease was already in place. How do we know that? It's in his report. On page 10 of his report, he actually says he defines fee simple as absolute ownership unencumbered by any other interest. Judge Peeler, in his opinion on page 12, quotes Mr. Burt, in which he says, Burt assumes the property was, quote, owned in fee simple and transferred in fee simple. So please understand that. As far as we're concerned, that takes care of about 90% of Mr. Burt's argument. It's based on this false premise that Mr. Burt knowingly and fully and completely tried to appraise the subject property as if it were already leased, and he's not done that. When somebody acquires fee simple, they acquire the whole bundle of rights, including the right to earn income through leases. And what Mr. Byrne is really focusing on is what I call a nanosecond. He's saying, well, yeah, you can look at leases, but the truth is on January 1 at midnight, when you do the valuation, you have to assume there's no lease, which is true. And we should make a large adjustment. He has no market basis for this, no study. But if it takes a nanosecond or 5 minutes or 10 minutes to actually enter into a lease that generates income, we must make this huge adjustment. And of course, that's not realistic. That's not how properties buy and sell. People don't buy it to own it for a nanosecond. They buy it to own it long term. It's a highly hyper technical kind of argument. If you read appellant's brief, you'd think this entire case resolves around this statutory issue. But if you look at it from 30,000 feet, what's really going on is, and if you read Judge Peeler's opinion, he meticulously goes through all the evidence from both appraisers, talks about the pros and cons, talks about what kind of leases. And what he concludes, if you read it, is he really, really doesn't like Mr. Rasek's analysis above and beyond this issue of fee simple. He talks about the inferior sorts of comparables he uses. He uses many comparables that didn't even sell. They've been on the market for years and years. They're clearly failed properties that can't attract interest. The subject property is a highly successful retail location with other retail locations that are highly successful right next door. So this concept that somehow we should be focused just on this hyper technical issue, we think, you know, mostly irrelevant, because even if you found some merit in what they're arguing, it's not really what the case was decided on. There's umpteen other reasons why Judge Peeler decided the way that he decided. He correctly cites Lowe's 2. Lowe's 2 came out right before we had to start briefing to the magistrate. And again, we thought it resolved all the issues. So frankly, we're surprised we're still here. But we think the court clearly understood that in order to figure out what income potential in this bundle of rights a potential owner has, you simply have to look at leases in the marketplace. And if they're not at market, then you go ahead and make your adjustments. Mr. Burt did make his adjustments. He calls them locational. In Lowe's 2, Mr. Sprout, who this court upheld, the appraiser there, he also made adjustments. He called them property rights, but they were the same sorts of economic adjustments. The majority of the comps in Mr. Sprout's analysis also were at market. And so the adjustments he made reflected the fact that the rents in the comps were higher for the most part than the rents in the subject, and therefore he had to make downward adjustments. Mr. Burt did much the same thing in his analysis. The appellants mischaracterize what Judge Peeler did. They make a statement on page four of their brief, merit brief, in which they say, quote, Judge Peeler held that accepting Rancho's argument that its property should be valued as free of legal encumbrances would be legal error. That is not what Judge Peeler said. What he actually said was this: to interpret the law as requested by Rancho to eliminate leases entirely from any property valuation would be legal error. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead back to Lowe's too. What they're really saying, if they're acting in good faith here, is what they're really saying is this court made a mistake in Lowe's too. This court should not have ruled that it's okay to use lease fee comparables when you're doing an analysis of fee simple property. They also mischaracterized the 12th District holding. Let me quote from their brief, page 5. Quote, the 12th District rejected Rancho's argument that the subject property should be valued as if unencumbered. Not only is that not what the 12th District said, they said just the opposite. Let me quote page 7 of the 12th District's opinion. Quote, for real property tax purposes, the fee simple estate is to be valued as if it were unencumbered. How could it be any more, you know, opposite than what they allege? And they cite to the Alliance Towers case. I also wanted the court to understand that Mr. Rasek, the appraiser for the appellant, failed to abide by the dictates of Lowe's 2 in his treatment of many of his leased fee comparables. I cite the court to page 39 of his report, supplement 48, where he talks about comp number 6. It has a lease on it. Guess what? He makes no adjustment for that lease. He doesn't talk in there about whether the lease is above or below market. He violates Lowe's 2. page 41, he talks about a Burlington Northern comp. No analysis of whether or not the lease is above or below market. Finally, on page 45, he looks at a Lowe's, which is what the subject property is. He looks at a Lowe's comparable. He makes no mention of whether the lease on that Lowe's is above or below market. Mr. Bird, of course, does do that in-depth analysis. He does look at it, and he makes the appropriate adjustments, whereas Mr. Rasich didn't. I don't know if the court has any more questions, but I've really gotten through what I wanted to talk about, and I'll be happy to defer to Mr. Watkins if there's no other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Watkins.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Mr. DiMuzio covered a great portion of what I was going to argue also. Specifically, the Lowe's 2 case, we believe, is the controlling case for this court to consider. The language that Mr. DiMuzio quoted that in Lowe's 2 that says that the language of RC 571303 applies to the valuation of the property itself does not prescribe any standards to be applied in a comparable sales analysis. Your Honor, Mr. Burt did indeed value the property fee simple as if unencumbered, according to what the statute requires. When a property is valued fee simple unencumbered that does have an existing lease on it, the job of the appraiser is to take the effect of the lease out of the equation. And then you look at the bundle of rights that the owner of the property would have as if they were going to lease the property. And certainly if one of the bundle of rights of a fee simple interest is the right to lease it at economic terms, Mr. Bird and his appraisal looked at that. He looked at the market. One thing I did want to point out about Mr. Burt's appraisal report is he did verify all of the sale data and lease data with independent brokers and the buyers and sellers, and it is indicated in his report. Mr. Rasich, it does not appear in his report that he actually did verify the data. And Mr. Burt did look at the market to see if it were at market, and then also did make adjustments based on the fact that certain conditions would favor at a certain time in the lease would favor the current valuation versus not using or making a downward adjustment if it was not the same economic period. And also, as far as the location of the property, a property in a certain market may be there may not be the same market condition, the same property rights, but it may be a different market. So you have to adjust for the location. And that is what Mr. Burt did in his report. He did reflect the market conditions and location and made adjustments for those. So he did, in fact, look at the market and evaluate it as such. I believe if you look at the comparables that Mr. Rasich used, he used a lot of what we call second generation properties, properties that are vacant and have had a longstanding vacancy and have not been leased for a considerable amount of time. In fact, in his lease, his income analysis, a lot of the leases that he used were for older properties. And also, I think the last 7 or 8 of his leases that he analyzed in the income approach really did not have any data as far as actual lease rates. I think they were just available to be leased rather than actual leased. So if you look at the actual data and complying with the court's requirements, I believe Mr. Burt did a much better job. And the trier of fact, Mr. Judge Peeler, did weigh both appraisals and determined that that Mr. Burt's appraisal was more probative and competent evidence. So I would ask the court to affirm the decision.
Thank you. Mr. Burt, you have a little over 4 minutes left.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I did try to raise my hand for a second. Is it too late?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Byrne.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address the implication by counsel for the Board of Education that Lowe's 2 controls that were Rancho was somehow fighting the Lowe's 2 decision. The holding of Lowe's 2 is what I said in my initial argument and was cited in the brief many times and was ignored essentially by the Board of Education in the county, that a lease is an encumbrance and that 5713.03's directive is to value the property as if it were free of lease encumbrances. Counsel for the Board of Education and the county keep saying that the way to adjust for property rights under Ohio law is to determine whether the leases in place are at market. Rancho asks, where does this emanate from? This standard clearly conflicts with the plain language of 5713.03, and the standard doesn't appear in any decision by this court. I'd also like to address the other portion of Lowe's too that was cited by Appalese, that 5713.03 does not prescribe standards under the comparable sales approach. That quote cited by Appalese clearly says that 5713.03 controls the valuation of property. And so an appraiser can use any comparable sales that he or she would like to use in a comparable sales analysis. But if a finder of fact determines that a property can be valued as if it were encumbered on the assessment date, that it can be valued as if it transfers in this hypothetical sale encumbered by a lease, then that is clear legal error. And that's exactly what the Court of Common Pleas did in this case, and that's exactly what was affirmed by the 12th District. And so Rancho was asking that this court apply the statement it made in paragraph 19 of the Lowe's 2 decision, because that standard has not been applied by the Court of Common Pleas or the 12th District. I'd also like to address counsel for the Board of Education's characterization of the real estate market and talking about this nanosecond theory when it comes to when a property transfers. The Board of Education is right in a sense that property must be valued based on what it would sell for if it is unencumbered on the assessment date. And there's market data in Basics report and even here and there in Burt's report that shows a difference between the value of properties that sell unencumbered and the value of properties that sell encumbered. It doesn't matter whether the buyer of the property takes owner occupancy, tries to lease the property. What's must be judged is the property rights that transfer at the time of sale. Finally, I would like to address the notion that Mr. Burt, the Board of Education appraiser, did adjust for property rights. That's simply not true. In page 158 of the supplement, when talking about property rights, Mr. Burt states that the rent and lease terms were in line with the market, and no adjustments were made to the sale price for above or below lease rate terms. In the previous Rite Aid decision that occurred before the revisions to 5713.03, the appraiser in that case did the exact same thing. The court called it illogical on its face. And with that, unless there are any questions, we respectfully request that the court find that property must be valued as a funding number.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.